Hello everyone, you are listening to Black Adoptees Identities. I am your host, Christelle Pellicure, and I am a coach and a multidisciplinary creative. Please join me to explore what identity means for adult adoptees and how they form their identity for their own adoption journey. In this podcast, you'll hear a variety of views from adult adoptees about their own experience of adoption and how adoption has impacted them and what lessons they have learned along the way. Please note that the guests have been courageous in sharing their stories, and some of the content and subject matters can be emotionally challenging and distressing for some individuals. Please use your own judgment whether to continue to listen or not, and do look after yourself. And if you are affected by some of the issues discussed, please seek appropriate support and help. In this episode, I am in conversation with Sana Latrice Cotten, the founder and CEO of Enasham Inc., a nonprofit organization working with young people in foster care. Sana shared her traumatic early years with birth family and her traumatic time in foster care before being adopted. She also discussed her chaotic teenagehood and becoming a teen mom, and our journey into adulthood and finding comfort in our faith. Hello, everybody. Welcome to Black Adoptees Identities. I am Christelle Pellicure, your host, and I am joined today by Sana Cotten, who is going to share with us her journey through the adoption system and what she's been learning throughout that journey. Sana Latrice Cotten has dedicated her life to helping disadvantaged families and advocating for youth within the foster care system. As the founder and CEO of Unashamed Inc., a nonprofit organization, she works to promote emotional health and support families affected by incarceration, foster care, and teen pregnancy. In addition to her advocacy work, Sana is a sought-after transformational speaker and author, sharing a personal story of surviving early childhood sexual abuse and growing up in the foster care system. Sana's effort has not gone unnoticed, as she has been featured in various media outlets, including Willie Moore Jr. Lunchtime Link Up and CBN's The 700 Club. In recognition of her achievement, she was named one of the 100 Women of Color by June Archer and 1128 Entertainment in 2019. Outside of her professional endeavors, Sana is a devoted wife to her husband Joshua and a proud mother to their two children, Jameer and Janai. She is also a doting grandmother to her grandson, Saya. Sana, welcome.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. I'm so excited to be here.
I'm really excited to have you too. So for the audience, tell us a little bit about yourself and your journey for adoption.
Absolutely. So I am in Connecticut. I currently reside in Middletown, Connecticut, but my journey in the child welfare system began in Bridgeport, Connecticut, which is one of the largest cities here in Connecticut, and also one of the roughest cities in Connecticut. So I was born to two parents who were addicted to drugs and could not obviously take care of us properly. I do have a twin brother as well. We're fraternal twins. And so at the age of 4.5, it was discovered that I had been being sexually trafficked by my biological mother and grandmother. And this was discovered at a doctor's appointment that we went to for just a normal routine physical. And at this normal routine physical, I began to scream when the doctor proceeded to do my exam. And so that, of course, raised some red flags for the medical team there. And they called in a female nurse who began to ask me some questions at the very young age of 4.5. And I, in my best explanation, gave her what was happening to me. And so at that point, the police were contacted and the Department of Children and Families was contacted. And my brother and I were placed into the child welfare system, into our first foster home. This foster home, we ended up being in for probably about 5 years. It was the only foster home that we entered. So we were there for the majority of our time in the child welfare system. We, of course, did experience some respite care homes during that time. And for those that don't know, respite care homes are basically homes that youth that are in care are sent to when the foster family may need some type of a rest period. Maybe they're taking a vacation or they need a mental health break or they're experiencing some medical issues. The foster children are then sent to respite homes, which are also licensed by the Department of Children and Family to provide care for those that are in care. And so we did experience a couple of those homes. Unfortunately, I was also molested in one of those respite care homes, which then sped up my process for adoption. At the age of 8 years old, we began the adoption process, which it looks different for all adoptees, I believe. But for my brother and I, we had an amazing social worker. And so our social worker did her best to make sure that I was very aware of the process and what was happening to us and what was going to happen to us in this adoption process. We did a lot of visits back and forth with the adopted family. So we would do like day visits to restaurants or parks and things like that with our social worker there to just kind of get us comfortable with the family. And then eventually we would have a couple of overnight visits with the family. And then finally we had our day where we were placed permanently into the adoption home, which I think leading up to that day, we had a great process, but that day was very traumatic for me. I don't think that our transition from our foster home to our adopted family on that day was smooth. I don't think it was well thought out with our best interests in mind. And so it caused a lot of trauma for me just with that transition from being with a family for 5 years almost, and then you know, you go to school one day, a regular day, you just go to school, and all of a sudden your social worker is at the school saying you're not going back. So there was never no goodbyes, there was never no make sure I grab my favorite teddy bear. You know, they had packed all of our clothes into her car already, and off we went to our adopted home. And we got there and all communication with our foster family was cut off immediately. During the time we were still in foster care, we still had some communication and visits with our bio mom and bio uncle, and all of that was cut off immediately. And now we're in this new home. And so we were in this new home for about a year before the adoption actually became legal, before we went to the court and the adoption was legal. And I remember that day in court, the judge asking us, you know, at this point, we're almost 9 years old, and the judge is asking us, do you want to be adopted by this family? And I remember just taking a pause, which felt at the time like it was like a half hour, but it probably was only minutes, and really thinking about, do I want to be adopted into this family? And the family, it wasn't that the family was a bad family. There were definitely some things that I wish were differently. I didn't feel like my adopted family was nurturing. I felt like they took care of us, right? They provided shelter and clothing and food and good education and Christian teaching and all of those things. But I didn't feel like there was a lot of love and cuddling and conversation and things of that nature. I didn't feel like those things existed. And those things were very important for me, specifically coming from the trauma that I had experienced previously. So I thought of that. I considered that at the age of almost 9, which is a very young age, but you gotta remember that with all the trauma I experienced and then being placed in the child welfare system, it required me to grow up very quickly and to understand what was going on. And my brother, although he did not experience the sex trafficking and the sexual abuse that I experienced, that transition from our bio family into the foster care system almost made him mute, where he just stopped speaking. He wouldn't talk to anyone but me. So a lot of the decisions that were made for us were directed towards me. And so I had to kind of grow up fairly quickly. And so the other part of that thought at that moment before the judge was, this is final. This means I will never get to see my bio family again. And although my mother had, placed me into such a horrible situation of sex trafficking and allowing other people to sex traffic me, there was still a part of me that wanted my mom, that hoped that she would get it together, she would apologize, and she would be the mom that we needed her to be. And this adoption meant that I was taking that opportunity away from her. And it felt very final to me. And so after, thinking of all of that, the other side of that was, if I say no, what happens? Do we get placed back into the foster care system? Do we end up with a new family that, I'm getting abused again? I didn't know what that looked like. And so I ultimately made a decision that I was thought was best for my brother and I, which was, yes, we want to be adopted. And I dealt with whatever came after that.
Thank you so much for sharing that. And I'm so sorry to hear that you and your brother had to go through that. At any age, you should be going through that. But as a child and children, that is a lot to take. And we all know that adoption is a trauma, but it had even more different layer of trauma on top of the adoption. How did you get through your teenagehood knowing you had all this trauma? How did you even build an identity and survive those years? Because, like I say, as an adoptee with just the separation from the mother, it's hard enough to go through that period. But with everything else that you went through, what did support you?
My teenage years were very hard for me. After I got adopted, I began trying to be what I call the perfect child. And so I tried to make sure that my grades were always good. I tried to make sure that my chores were always done. And, I ate all the food on my plate and did all the things that I was supposed to do to be the perfect child. And, the family that we were adopted into was a very, they were very strict and structured. So, there were expectations for us to do these things, right? And they're not things that any normal kid is not required to do, getting good grades, doing your chores, all those things. But I found myself trying to overachieve in those areas. And I did that for quite some time. And then when I got to high school, my adopted mother came to me and she said, she came to my brother and I. We were about 14 at the time, and she said she had gotten information that our biological mother was incarcerated. And she had been diagnosed with AIDS, our biological mother. And she felt that it would be good for us to meet her. At the time, this is the 90s, and the AIDS epidemic was very wide. A lot of people have been being diagnosed with AIDS. And if we be honest, there wasn't a lot of education around what HIV and AIDS meant. For a lot of us, we just thought it meant death immediately. And so, we weren't sure how long she had to live. And so my adopted mother being a Christian woman, decided that she thought it would be good for us to go to the prison and be able to meet her. And so this is the first time that we're getting to lay eyes on her and speak to her since we were about 8 years old. And so we go to the prison, and I got to meet my mom and look into eyes that looked like me, into a face that looked like mine, and hear a laugh that was very resembled mine a lot, very familiar. And the longing in my heart to be with my mom, even though she was in prison, even though she was struggling still with a drug addiction, even though she had been diagnosed with AIDS, there was still a longing for me to be with her. And so when we left the prison that day, I began writing my biological mom back and forth. She became like a pen pal to me. And so I would write her, I would share, you know, all the things that were going on in my life as a high school girl. And she eventually got out of prison, and our adopted mom allowed us to kind of go, you know, spend a Saturday with her or a whole weekend with her and, you know, really get to know her. And that longing just became stronger for me to want to be with my mom. And I was willing to risk it all. You know, I was willing to risk the shelter and the comfort that I had at this adopted home to be with my mom. And, you know, she was staying with friends. She at the time didn't yet have employment, but I just wanted to be with her. And unfortunately, my mom wasn't able to, you know, stay clean when she got out of prison, and she, you know, went back into the world of drugs and addiction. And that relationship between she and I ended, but the longing for her did not end for me. And so by the time we turned 15 years old, my brother had gotten into trouble and got incarcerated and did 10 years in jail. And I found myself feeling very much alone, surrounded by people, but alone, because the person that I shared the womb with was now not with me. This is the first time that we had ever been separated. And I felt very responsible for that, because I felt like I'm his big sister and I should have, you know, known better or been there or stopped the things that he was doing or whatever. So I felt a sense of responsibility for him and guilt for him now, you know, spending his teenage years incarcerated. And I decided that I was going to go search for my biological family, which I did. And I found my mother's father, and I found aunts and cousins. And I just decided I'm leaving. And one day I just packed up my clothes and I left. And I went and I stayed with my biological family. Again, my mother was incarcerated, but I stayed with her sisters and her father. Basically couch surfed for a couple of years. And then, you know, I dropped out of school. I was a sophomore. I dropped out of school at 15. I went to Job Corps, which is kind of a alternative to high school for youth here in Connecticut. They have them all throughout the country here in different states. And I was able to go there and get my GED and get a culinary certificate there. And I ended up, you know, losing my virginity in those years. I became a teen mom in those years. I was in a mutually abusive relationship in those years. I was involved in just all the wrong things. I began dancing in strip clubs to provide for my son. It just was a lot of things that I just shouldn't have been doing, but I was trying to figure out who I was. I was trying to get the love that I felt was missing in my life. I was trying to create a family of my own that, you know, I had someone to love and someone would love me. And my interpretation of what life was supposed to be like was very skewed. It was just a very skewed perspective, and it got me into a lot of situations that I ultimately would regret, but as an adult appreciate, because it has definitely strengthened who I am as a woman at the age of 41 today.
Yeah, I wasn't expecting the trauma keep coming. It's a lot to really unfold, and you're saying you're still in your teenager then. And I had assumed, I guess, that once you were adopted, you would have had support in terms of all the trauma that you had previously, but hearing you now, I am assuming that you didn't get any support, even like therapy and things like that.
I had some therapy when I was in foster care, but in adoption, I didn't have therapy. They didn't believe in therapy. You know, Christian Black, the Black church back then did not think of therapy as helpful as they think of it now in 2024. I didn't have the support that I needed. Absolutely not. I didn't have that. I didn't have the relationships where I felt safe and heard and seen and all those great things. I didn't have that. I think that my adopted mother did the best that she could with what she had. And from, you know, her own personal life experience of what she had, you know, experienced. And I just don't think that she or my adopted father really knew what it would take to deal with the trauma that came with adopting children from out of the child welfare system. And, you know, my adopted father was also adopted. And so I believe that he is the reason why adoption was even a discussion in their home. His adoption story is very much different from mine. He was adopted, you know, at a very young age in the South, you know, back in the 40s. And I just think it was very different from some of the experiences that children in the 80s and 90s experienced in the child welfare system.
So at this point, you had a son, and you have to also try to figure out where you are. You mentioned that you work for a nonprofit, and to me, you've managed to come back to a really beautiful life. Now you're married and have your own child now. Also, you mentioned that your child has a child of his own. So how do you go from that period of your time where everything was so chaotic and trying to find yourself to where you are now, and where you can reflect back at all this period and learn from all the experiences that you've been through? What has made the difference to where you are now today and found yourself?
I would love to take credit for where I am today, but I can't. I am a woman of faith, and I know that without my faith, I would not be where I am today, or even alive today, to be honest with you. When I was in foster care, the family that I was placed with were a pastor and a first lady of a church. And so that was my first experience with religion or God or faith or any of that. And even at a young age, you know, you go to church and different things, but you know, you don't always know what's going on. You really learn how to just do church. And that's what I learned, how to do church. But as I got older and continued going to church, even with my adopted family, still not knowing, like having a real relationship with God or anything like that. But as I got to my teenage years and I found myself in, you know, going house to house, I found myself in just situations I shouldn't be in, taking ecstasy pills, driving home, don't know how I would make it home, you know, safely without injuring myself or somebody else. When I think and reflect back on all of that, I know that it was because I had a purpose for my life. And when I had my son, my purpose in that time period was to make sure that my son was provided for and taken care of, and that he didn't end up in the child welfare system. And so I was forced to grow up even faster because I did not have the support from family. I didn't have a baby shower. People weren't excited that I was bringing new life into the world. That wasn't my story. That wasn't my path. And so I had to learn how to maneuver the system to be able to take care of my child and I had to make sure that we had decent housing, and I had to make sure he was safe. And so it required me to take my trauma and put it in a box and push it over to the side so that I could focus on what I needed to focus on day to day to survive. And that's what I did. And unfortunately, when you do that, when you wrap your trauma up and push it to the side, you are essentially creating a false version of who you are. That is what I did. I created this false version of who I was, and I lived that character for a long time so that I could survive and so my son would not know what it meant to struggle. And so together we grew up, you know, we grew up together. I eventually had a bad situation happen with my son's father, which all that trauma that I wrapped up, it just burst at the seams. And we got into a really bad altercation one day, and I essentially tried to murder him. And by the grace of God, he survived and I didn't go to jail. But that day was the end of an era for me. It was the end of me pretending to be someone that I wasn't. It was the end of me not allowing my trauma to be seen. And I made a decision in prayer that night that I wanted to be better and I wanted to do different. And I wanted the Lord to send me someone who would love me. And he did. Literally, the next day, I met the man who would become my husband. I visited a church that I'd never been at before. And as I walked up the walkway to this church, I saw this man standing outside. Never seen him a day in my life before. He was talking on his cell phone. And I could hear the voice of God. I had never heard the voice of God before. I heard people talk about, you know, the voice of God. I'd never experiences for myself, but I did in that moment. And he said, "That's your husband." And I was like, "What?" You know, like, what in the world? You know, because it was very weird for me. I never heard that before. But he ended up being my husband. And we've been married now for going on 17 years. And he is actually the son of a pastor. And so I got very much involved in church. And even being involved in church, I was still coming to church. No one knew my story. No one knew about my abuse. No one knew about my foster care. No one knew that I was a teen mom. No one knew any of that stuff. I hid it because I was ashamed of who I was. I was ashamed of what I had gone through. And I felt like there was no place for my shame in the church. And so I switch characters, essentially. I just became a new character and I began to act the way the people in the church acted, like everything was perfect and life was good. And, you know, and I never experienced any bad things. But eventually that stuff catches up with you. And when you start to really develop a real relationship with God, he challenges you to be who he created you to be and not the person that you have created for yourself. And that's what happened to me. He challenged me to start opening my mouth and telling my story and sharing about the things that I have gone through. And I did that. And when I tell you, the people in the church shunned me. They told me that my story did not have a place in the church and that I should not be telling it. And you know, it was a really hard time for me, but it allowed me to develop my true relationship with God outside of people, outside of tradition, outside of religion and all those things. It allowed me to really develop a real relationship with God. And I made a choice that I was going to live my life for him and for nobody else. And I was going to be obedient to what he told me to do and no one else. And I think that because of my obedience to him, I have been able to be the success that I am now. So in 2024, I live my life unashamed. I tell my story transparently, honestly. I don't care how hard it is. I tell it boldly, in hopes that other people will hear my story. And if it resonates or they've experienced some of the same things, they won't experience the shame that I experienced. They won't experience the church hurt that I experienced. And so I tell it boldly, and that has opened doors for me. I started and founded this nonprofit called Unashamed, where we work with foster youth and youth that are at risk. primarily teenagers that are transitioning out of care or have experienced any of the things that I've experienced, which is teen pregnancy, homelessness, domestic violence, and foster care, as well as incarceration. You know, we work with those youth to ensure that they have a better life, and we try to plant seeds into their life that will eventually bloom into successful lives. And I have two children. My son is 21. My daughter she'll be 16 in a month. And, I've been married for going on 17 years to who I know is a man that God created just for me. And it hasn't always been perfect because, again, you know, I came into a marriage married to a man who has the complete opposite story of me. He's never experienced the trauma that I've experienced. And if I be honest, he didn't find out about the trauma that I experienced until way after we were married. And so there was a lot of healing that I had to do while being married, while raising children. And I've done the work so that I can boldly help other people do the work as well.
It's very inspiring. I'm listening to you and the journey you've been through and to where you are today. I'm sure it will really inspire so many people who's listening today, but I'm sure you've shared your story before and you've also inspired a lot more people before as well. It's really an amazing journey, difficult, painful, but you also a proof that being authentic is what the journey we need to lead towards, because the problem with a lot of adoptees is we conform to a certain value, yeah. Society, family. So we can never be ourselves, our authentic self most of the time. And when you mentioned about boxing up all your trauma into a side to be able to raise your son, I relate very much because I had my daughter when I was 20 and I was still dealing with all my trauma of adoption and I had to do the same. I had to box it all up on the side and just focus on raising my daughter. But like you say, it can't ever be boxed up forever. At some point, all this trauma is coming up and catch you up. So we need to find a way to heal, but also to find our authentic self and our authentic voice. And I think the work you're doing with Unashamed is amazing. And this is one way of, you know, finding your authentic voice, but also sharing your adoption journey and everything that you've been through really help other people. And I think that's part of the reason I've put this podcast on, so people can share their authentic voice and inspire other people. So I'm really, really grateful for your story, for coming to share with me today. I mean, there's so much to unpack in your own story. And it's amazing to see where you started to where you are today. And really grateful to have heard your story. So one question that I ask many of the guests that come on the podcast is, if you had an advice to give to your younger self or to a young adoptee, what advice would you tell them?
I would tell them, you are altogether beautiful. There are no flaws in you. And I would tell my younger self or an adoptee the same thing, because we are raised to believe a lot of times as adoptees that we're the reason that we were adopted, that our family, you know, we caused an issue in the family, or we were a secret, or we were a mistake, or, you know, and we go through our life feeling responsible for, you know, everything that we go through. Like, I was adopted, I deserve this. I deserve this pain. I deserve this. I deserve that. And the truth is, it's not your fault. You don't have to bear the scars of other people's decisions. You were created and brought into this world for a purpose. And every single part of your journey and your story and the mistakes you make and the successes that you have are a part of who you were supposed to be. It is all for a reason. And I believe that nothing that we experience is wasted. Every single thing that we experience is used to build our character, to build our story, to build our integrity. And you have to take back those things that were meant to destroy you and use it to really live a bold life, to be beautiful, to recognize that you are not flawed, that nothing in you is a flaw. Everything was purposely made and designed for you to experience and endure. And if you just shift your perspective on the path and the journey that you were handed, you will do some amazing things in the world. And the longer you keep your mouth shut and don't tell and don't share, you are in fact holding up, halting, and hindering someone else from being healed from what is inside of you.
Yeah, that is so true. Thank you so much for that advice. And I've actually got one more question I want to ask. Where are you on your journey now? Are you still trying to reconcile with some of your adoption story, or are you completely over? What is your relationship with your birth family and your adoptive family? And how is your relationship with your brother now?
So my relationship with my brother it's not the greatest. He's home. He did a lot of time in and out of prison. And I don't think that his traumas were ever properly addressed either, which is why, you know, he's experienced some of the things that he has experienced. But I think one of the other things that we don't talk about a lot in the child welfare system is the fact that a lot of us are parentified. And so for me, my relationship with my brother, the day we were placed into the child welfare system, went from brother and sister to mother and son. And so a lot of his years in prison, I have had to be a mom. And so it's a very skewed relationship on, you know, how do you, at what point does the mom and son role stop and the sister brother role begin, or how does that work? And so we haven't been able to really figure that out. So it's not a horrible relationship. We do talk, you know, he comes by the house every once in a while, but it's definitely not where I would love it to be for my twin. You know, he's not just my sibling, he's my twin. And so it's not where I would like it to be, but you know, I believe that there's nothing impossible for God, and that can be changed, you know, in the blink of an eye. As far as my birth family goes, the maternal side of my birth family, I am not associated much with any of them. I only speak with maybe three members of my birth family. My mother unfortunately passed when I was pregnant with my son. So I don't have obviously there, we never reconciled. So there's no relationship. There was no relationship there. And my paternal side of the family, I never knew, if I be honest. I never, even through my entire journey in the foster care system and then being adopted and then being a teenager, I never even considered that I had a father. My focus was just always on my mother. It just never dawned on me that it took two people to have created me. Until I became an adult in my 20s, did I start saying, hold on, you know, well, where is my father and what's that story? And so I began a journey to find him with no information, because there was no name on my original birth certificate. My maternal side of the family was very unhelpful in any information. They really didn't know, and what they thought they knew was not the truth. And so it took over 10 years, but in 2021, I finally, through the help of a genealogist and a DNA test, was able to finally find my paternal side of the family. They all live in North Carolina, which is a good 16-hour drive from me, and they are amazing. My father unfortunately passed away in the early 90s from HIV, so I was not ever able to, you know, hear his laugh or look into his eyes or be a daddy's girl, which was always my hope when I found him, that I would be the daddy's girl. But he left two older brothers for me. So I do have two additional older brothers who are 10 years older than me. And he left a host of family that has welcomed me and my brother in. They're amazing people. They're amazing. My adopted family, I mean, they're my family. They're my family forever. The relationship, you know, with my adopted mother and I is not the best. She and I, you know, we don't talk every day, but it's not a bad relationship. It's just that I've learned to come into an understanding that I placed some false expectations on her that she was not able to meet. And I had to manage, and I'm working on managing what my expectations of her are. My adopted father passed away about 7 years ago, but he was an amazing dad, and I was much closer to him than I was to my adopted mother when he was alive. And, you know, I have cousins and different family that I am trying to do better for me. Again, I don't believe that they ever treated me like I wasn't a part of the family. I never felt that way. It was really my own internal issues and my own internal trauma and my own internal expectations of what I wanted and needed from a family. And I, you know, I didn't have those things. And so it was never them that was the issue. It was definitely me. And so I'm doing the work now to really put myself out there more and spend more time with family and put more of a focus on family because, you know, family is all we got. And so that's kind of where I am.
Great. Yes, family is all we got. It's complicated, but thank you so much, Sana. I'm really grateful for speaking to you and hearing your journey and your story. So thank you so much for your time.
Thank you.
This is Crystal Pellecure, and you have been listening to Black Adoptees Identities, where Black adult adoptees share their stories. Please do share and subscribe to our podcast and do stay connected with us by following us on Instagram at Black Adoptees Identities. Thank you for listening to this week's episode, and until next time, goodbye.